July 15th, 2015. It's a Watt from Pedro's show.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show here at the Love Grotto. Pleasure Point here at Pedro.
Yeah, Brother Matt. It's been a while.
It's been a good while.
Yes.
And
back in the homeland, got our synchronized schedules.
I think last time was before I went on tour. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It was like April, May.
I left, I think, at the end of April. We're not alone, Brother Matt.
We got a
visitor from Arizona.
Skyping
via the Skypes.
Yes, welcome.
In fact, it's your first time using Skype here?
No.
On this iPad?
On the iPad, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's introduce our guest, Chris Kirkwood.
Welcome.
Hey, you guys. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, damn right. You're coming through a little iPad via Skype. I think.
Right on.
It's Estonian. I think Estonians came up with the software. And you know who's Estonian, Chris?
Huh.
Raymond Pettibone's ma.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's the connect for today.
The Estonian connect.
The Estonian connect. You got it. We start off the show with, well, you need John Coltrane with Thelonious Monk. It was a fuck-up. They had to start over. I wanted to play that so people would realize even badass beboppers like that blow clams. And then we heard Sawako and Daisuke Miyatani with Fell Fall in honor of you being on the show, Chris. I got to be on Chris's show before that tour, Brother Matt.
Oh, cool.
Before I left on that tour with Missing Men in Europe, Third Opera. Was I the second man aboard?
I think you might have been. I think so. That was the very first time getting about it, you know.
Yes, he's just getting his show together.
Oh, very cool.
He's got a thing like this, right?
Pretty much. I mean, it's just, it's...
But you don't do it in Arizona. You come to SoCal to do it.
Yeah, I've been coming out there and doing them at a studio in Hollywood, and...
Well, now that you're getting all Skype-ified, maybe you could stay home over the computer.
Make it a bit easier, definitely, but I mean, it's
some hell rides.
Yeah.
Chicago, too.
I've driven out there a lot, you know. We've driven out there so many times, it's not even funny, so it's not, you know, it's kind of... It sets me up for, you know, going into work mode.
What's the town, Buckeye?
Let's see. Yeah, there's Buckeye. That's the far west side of Phoenix.
That's the far west one, right?
Yeah, you know.
It's not really part of Phoenix, but, you know, as you're getting towards Buckeye from Phoenix, there's still streets and avenues. They're, like, numbered in the hundreds.
Yeah, all the way out there. And pretty much Buckeye now connects with Phoenix, you know, as far as, like, it's kind of grown all the way out there to it. Cause,
we're talking Tracomlandia and Mallandia.
Way, and the disruption of the beautiful desert and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's a trip, Michael. When we first started coming out to Los Angeles, you know, yeah. And this has been the very early 80s, the 10 didn't even connect, the I-10 freeway.
That's
actually
right.
You remember that? It, stopped at Dysart Road is the name of the road. Yeah, you'd have to drive all the way out. If we were going to L.A., I'd drive all the way out west to the, on city surface streets to get onto the freeway.
Damn.
So, yeah, and now the town just has grown all the way out there to that, you know. Now it's just such a big, stretched-out chunk of fucking reality.
So changes.
Yeah, quite a bit of changes, you know. And I mean, and for this place, definitely. Phoenix has grown a lot, you know, considering how small it was when we first got out here.
Okay, let's go back to the beginning. Can you tell me the first musical recollection you have?
First musical recollection... I don't know. My memory's kind of shaky, but
mine too.
You know, I mean, it would have been like some of the very earliest musical stuff would have been like Mom used to like to take us on road trips. You know, my brother Kurt, of course, is you know, a little bit older than me, and I was relegated to the back seat, and they would sing. I remember that Mom and Kurt would actually sing together.
Okay, so the first music you can remember is your brother and your ma singing.
Awesome. Yeah, pretty That's much, vicious. That kind of stuff. You know, and Mom wasn't a big music person, really, but there were just, like, these certain things that had come out that she had. You remember that on our first record there on Me Puppets 1, there's Tumble and Tumbleweed.
Yeah,
you know?
Love
it. We got that off of Mom. That came through her. That was one of the things she sang. And then there was stuff, I think, from her dad's generation, maybe.
Who wrote that? Wasn't it the same dude who wrote Cool Water?
Maybe, you know, he got me there. I'd have to look, but it might have been. And Cool Water was another one. That was another one that she was definitely.
Is that right?
Breakout.
So,
you know,
because you guys got really into playing standards, so maybe that goes way back with you guys.
Somewhat, but it wasn't like mom wasn't like a musical person, you know. It wasn't like she didn't head us in that direction at all. It was just kind of a thing where there was just a handful of stuff that she knew and, you know, it would sing with Kurt. And back then, I mean, I think they actually harmonized, and I didn't really realize what was going on with it at all. I was real young. It was just ages ago. She liked to take road trips, you know, so we'd get in the car and
start driving.
Yeah, you know, just me, mom, and Kurt, so.
Okay, so what about records? Do you remember when you first started getting records?
Somewhat, vaguely, you know. Anything like that would have come through Kurt, you know, him being a little bit older than me, so, you know, I'd have kind of
called. Did you talk in the same room?
Yeah, we totally did.
Yeah, so if he was playing music, of course you'd be hearing it.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember the Beatles actually got through at a really, really young age, you know.
Beatle records.
Yeah, you know, I was born in 60, so, you know, take it out a few years from there. And like, those albums, those records got through. And then there was some stuff that, you know, was around the house a little bit, record-wise, that was like a really early on kind of stuff. But I didn't really get that much into, like, records and stuff myself until I was a little bit older, you know.
What, Cats in School?
Yeah, and that, and still Kurt as well. And then, I mean, really, really getting into it. It all started like playing wise. It started.
Yeah,
with,
let's talk about playing. When did you, instead of just listening to music?
That happened. That happened. That happened around 1974, I think, when I saw the movie Deliverance. You know, it's like a.
Sure, James Dickey book.
And that scene where they
who's in it? Burt Reynolds.
It's Burt Reynolds, and Voight, and there's the scene with Ronnie Cox where he plays a little bit of bluegrass with that kid.
That's
that,
right, the porch, you know, kid.
And that banjo scene in that just lit me up.
It's called Dueling Banjos, but actually only one of them's a banjo.
Right, it's a dueling banjo. You know, and that, I don't know, that just turned me on. It was that age, you know, when you, that age, like. Stuff that catch your attention. Yeah, you know, when someone would just get your attention and you'd like, I don't know, that just really caught me. The banjo just suddenly caught my interest. And I'd had lessons before that. I'd actually taken lessons. Mom had, like, had us take, you know, music lessons. Like, there was this guitar teacher that came over to the house, and I didn't really like it. It just didn't, you know, it wasn't anything I was that interested in. And then she had me take some piano lessons as well when I was young, and I didn't really like that much either. You know, none of that stuff really stuck. But once I saw that scene in Deliverance, you know, I went out and got myself a banjo as a little kid and took some lessons in that, and that's what did it. That's what, like, turned me on to, like what playing was in a way, you know, and I don't know, it just opened my head up to it, to myself in a really cool way.
Now, did you and Kurt, your brother, do guitar, banjo? Did you do your own dueling?
No, not really. We weren't that, we didn't hang together that much back then, you know.
I know how it is. Even a couple years is a big difference when you're younger.
Yeah, and there was just that enough of a difference there so that, you know. And he was playing guitar, though. I mean, he kind of always had a guitar around in a way and had some lessons. And he actually, speaking of the bebop guys, he studied, he took some bebop lessons from a guy, McClarty was his name, that had his music shops where I got my banjo up in Sunny Slope, the part of Phoenix that we grew up in.
Sunny Slope.
Yeah.
I wonder if I've ever been there. Have I?
Maybe. I mean, it's just like the north part of town. You know where I live?
Well, what I know of the north is I-17 when you're coming down from Flagstaff.
Yeah,
and you get to Sunny Slope before you get to Phoenix.
Kinda, and it's a little bit off of the. It's a little bit east of the 17 there, okay. And it's right up like the neighborhood we're in. It's right up. I would have gone to Sunny Slope High School, except Mom sent us off to Brophy, right, Kurt? And I went to Brophy College Preps, the Jesuit, you know, high school in town. But, like, the grade school that I went to, Royal Palms, was, like, I'd have gone to Sunny Slope High.
You got Royal Palms, too.
Nice.
So yeah.
We got one here in Pedro.
There you go. And that's where I went
Roman
to grade
school. Roman Sepulveda building.
Yeah.
And then, like, the other high school, like, the in between the 17 and, like, my grade school and stuff, the other high school was Cortez.
Yeah.
And that's where Alice Cooper, you
that's
know, Vince Fournier.
Say.
That's where the Cooper went to school.
I mean, I only know about Camelback because of the song.
And the mountain there, that's the name of the mountain. That one mountain, you know, is Camelback Mountain. There's a Camelback High School, too.
Yeah.
You know? And that's named after the big mountain there in town.
Okay.
It looks like Camelback.
What about dudes at school? Did you start playing banjo, or was it just Man Alone?
No, it was just me alone, you know. I mean, it was before, it was like, it's still in grade school when I got the banjo.
Sure.
And definitely, you know, there wasn't like a, you know, it wasn't like a, I didn't have musical pals or anything like that, you know. It was just one of the things I was, like, interested in as a little kid.
Okay.
You know, and I took, you know, I took some lessons from a guy. And, I don't know, it was really bitching. There was a point where the practice suddenly kind of made the banjo roll a little bit, you know, trying to do the pull-offs and the hammer-ons that are entailed with the playing, you know. And sitting there and, you know, doing it, like, when you first start out, it just didn't, you know, the melody wasn't there or whatever, and I didn't really get it at all. And then just one day after having played it for a while, suddenly, like, the little thing went, you know, and
it was a breakthrough.
It was a total and complete breakthrough on a really, really cool level that I still remember, you know. It's like, just that, like, suddenly getting the notion that people would go out of their way to, like, make instruments, that people wanted to make music, you know, and that other people had made an instrument, you know, that they'd made this outlet for something just innate in people, the desire to make this noise, you know, and then the complexities of it as well. It just blew me away that there's, like, you know, that somebody could get to the point of figuring out that, like, you could add these grace notes around the melody, you know, and then the melody would be implied up underneath it and stuff. It was really neat. And that's how I actually got started.
With your own little personal... Okay.
You ever banjo anymore?
Yeah, you know what? I still actually have that banjo that I bought as a kid. I still have the exact same banjo. And
there was a gig at RFK Stadium where Chris came on with a banjo in a fucking jester suit.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We did the banjo. Oh, now
I think it's actually on YouTube.com or something. You can see you prancing in a jester suit and an unmicrophoned banjo at RFK Stadium.
Assload of people. Yeah, that was the first time I actually recorded, was on your record,
that's
Michael.
That's right, you know? Big Train.
Big Train, yeah, and that's like...
And I remember the sound man walking away. The motherfucker. We had no monitor man, and then the main guy walks away in front of 60,000 plus people.
Side mice.
Total side mice. So, I remember you telling me about this banjo thing before, but there, something happened at a camping trip.
At a camping trip?
Oh, maybe that's where you lost weight.
Yeah. Oh, that was the trip up to Alaska.
Okay. Because people, you might not know it, but Chris used to be belling when he was young.
Yeah, I was a big fatty. I mean, that's why, like, you know, saying did I play with other people and stuff, I was pretty withdrawn. I still am, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, fairly withdrawn on a personal level and stuff. And, like, definitely as a teenager, I let myself go ahead and get pretty goddamn chunky, you know.
Okay.
And then Kurt and I took that trip. It was, like, it was after high school. I started going down to Phoenix College.
Yeah.
Community college here in town. And they had this summertime trip that they offered for, and you got like college credit out of it, up to Alaska. And I decided, me and another pal decided to go on that, and Kurt decided to go as well, and we all went up there, and I lost a bunch of weight on that. And it was the summer of 79. So
okay.
Then coming back from that, that's like right after that is when, you know, we started playing with Derek shortly after that.
Derek Bostrom, because Derek Bostrom's very key, right?
Yeah, totally.
As far as you getting, because up to this point, you still haven't been in a band.
No, I hadn't. We had a little tiny band project, like, before we went up to Alaska.
Uh-huh.
I'd started playing bass somewhere in there a few years before that. You know, I was playing the banjo, and then bass started to look cool to me, you know. And
oh, wow.
You know, and I've been going to shows and stuff. I started getting into, like, going to live shows and started to realize that I, like, you know, that I like certain stuff and that you could go to shows. And Phoenix had a good amount of people come through here because just how the rooting thing, you know, coming out of California, you know, heading
also
east.
Also some homegrown bands too, like Feeders.
Yeah, that was later. That was, you know, I started to realize that stuff was going on later. I'm talking about like going to like, you know, just, you know, rock shows and jazz shows.
Oh, okay. Not the scene. Yeah.
No, not the scene. I wasn't aware of that yet, but concerts and stuff, you know, before that. And then, like, right before we went to Alaska, started to, like, hang out with a few different people and became aware of this other kind of music that was kind of going on. And Kurt and I played with this friend of mine, Jesse, and a guy from grade school that I'd gone to grade school with to play drums, and we had a little project called I-E-Y-E, right? And Jesse was like the lead singer of that, and Kurt and I played backup, and that lasted for just a minute, you know, and wasn't, I mean, it was so like, you know, tentative, like, you know, baby steps kind of stuff for me. And, but Kurt had been in bands already, though. He'd already been like, you know, playing in like cover bands and stuff, you know. He was like, and he was in a band called Keeley, which is it's Apache for warrior, and like okay. They were part of this the Ray Andrade orchestras. It was this family of, you know, musicians, and the dad or whatever kind of, they had, you know, did like a lot of like the like quinceañeros and stuff like that, you know. Sure. What I mean, and they had different, you know, groups and whatnot. Like Keeley actually wore like matching clothes, you know. They wore like these blue pants, like a blue vest, you know, like back 70s kind of thing, and they all dressed the same and stuff, and they do stuff like Walking in Rhythm, you know, the covers. And then Kurt actually was in a rock band too. He got fired from that. I think he got fired from Keeley, and then he was in a rock band with these guys, they called themselves Granite Reef, which is like that's a street here in town, and
A lot of reefs in Phoenix.
But it's like, you know, it's granite, right, which is rock, and then right. Reef, which is like reefer, right?
So, oh, okay. You know, Harry, Chris, let's listen to some music.
Let's do.
Sleepy, 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 he got some money anyway. gonna please you. Just a little town down in Indonesia, Bangkok. Woo, Bangkok. Lying in bed, one got his mouth up, the other said Bangkok. Ooh, we're Bangkok. Yeah. Making love the Japanese way, learned aggressively in Hong Kong, Bangkok. We're Bangkok. Ooh. Margaret Trudeau, Jackie O, Madame New, and Bridget Bardot, Bangkok.
Bleed the light in me, guide me. Yeah. please. This traffic in and out the back door has got to go. I want that door closed all the time. The music's on, or we pull the plug on the whole thing and shut it down. Well, that'll be my goddamn decision. I don't want any arguments about it. That door stays closed, and anybody that goes out it stays out it. That was Whisker.
Many a land has been the grand old face of the plateau. Some belong to strangers, and some to folks you know. Only those in cocktail hosts are planted in the sand to beautify the foothills and shake the many hands. Nothing on the top but a bucket and a mop and an illustrated book about birds. You see a lot of fear, but don't be scared. Who needs that when you've got words? When you're finished with the muffin, you can stop and look at what you do. There's not no screen, no one to be seen, no dreams, it's worth fun. There's nothing in the tub but a bucket and a mop and an illustrated book about birds. You see a lot up there, but don't be scared. You need that shit when you got words. Many hands again to dance for the next plateau. Some said it was dreamland, and some said Mexico. Others decided it was not.
Fuck you, baby. Pussy.
There's always a guess. Wouldn't
Belly
help
pussy.
Me
for Pedro Show. We just heard The Adventures of P.P. the Sailor by the Meat Puppets.
Yeah.
That's a Paul Leary song.
Yeah, oh, I know that. I remember Jella put out that first record.
Oh, that's right.
And there's P.P. the Sailor or some shit.
You know, Jello, the first time I played in L.A., it was with the Feeders.
Yeah.
I was fucking 19. And we played at the Whiskey opening for Jello and the DKs.
Yeah.
And the next night we drove up to San Francisco and played at the Mabuha, and it was my 20th birthday.
Damn.
Yeah.
We had many birthdays from Austin after that with Midnight Survival Odyssey, Tal Falco new album, doing the Alex Chilton song Bangkok, Solanke from Leeds from about 20 years ago. I got turned on to this by Cat in Finland. Short songs. Super Chunk with Me, You, and Jackie Mitu. The Space Pony from Ravenna, Italy. I Need You. Despise the Lie to Back Out of Pittsburgh. Banditos. No Good. No Means No. Al's Bag. Remember the bags? That's Alice. Doing a song just recent. She's quite a spokesperson and writer now. And then finally, Plateau, live, Meat Puppets, where this is from Whiskers.
And, oh, wow. That's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, the boss, it might be Whiskers himself, he says, telling people, hey, you can't be running in and out the back door. Stop the show. So let's talk about Derek Bostrom. You're telling us about your brother being in these other rock bands and these other kind of things, and you're switching over from banjo a little bit to the bass.
Yeah, I did play the bass for a minute, and then like I said, Kurt and I went up on that trip to Alaska, and that was a real fun one. You know, it was fun for me. I'd have been like 18 then, and somewhere near, I think I might have even grown a little bit taller or something, but I lost a bunch of weight, and somehow it kind of brought me out of my shell enough when we got back so that I was just a little more comfortable, you know, like, you know, just in my own self. And so when they're through a pal of ours, this guy I went to grade school with and that lived right down the street from me, Chris Hart, we like started meeting other people that he was aware of. You know, he was kind of an outgoing guy. And I think he hung out with like the LRY, you know, like the Liberal Religious Youth or something. It was part of like the Unitarian Church somehow. And there's these folks and just a different group of people, you know, that he knew. And through him, we met Derek. That's how we wound up meeting Derek.
Okay.
And these guys were all kind of like, I think they were kind of like hipper than us in a way. You know, they're definitely cooler than I was or something. Just a little more turned on, like culturally, kind of little like a slightly privileged side of town in a way, or, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, how the folks like that are kind of aware of cooler stuff or something. Anyways, Derek was just into this different kind of stuff. And he and Kurt started playing together a little bit, you know.
With just drumming guitar?
Yeah, yeah. And then somewhere in there that, you know, they decided, you know, they asked me if I wanted to play a little bit with them. So actually, like, I don't know if I'm actually a founding member or if I'm like, you know, the hired bass player or something, you know, somewhere in there. But, you know, and then when the three of us played together, then suddenly there was a group of people then. There was, like, you know, like-minded folks and whatnot, and there was music going on, you know. There's, you know, Derek knew other people that played as well. And it wasn't, like, the same thing that, like, Kurt had been doing, you know, where he's playing in these bands and we're trying to get, you know, paying gigs and, like, you know, fairly straightforward kind of stuff. And we're doing covers and all this kind of stuff. It was way more just kind of like, you know, getting going off into another tangent, you know, that... Where you're playing for your own, you know, amusement and whatnot. And
The scene. The stuff you were talking about. Yeah, okay.
Getting a little arty about it at that point, you know?
Right.
So, and Derek was aware of, like, of the punk rock scene that had been happening already, that had, you know, for a while, you know? And I mean, I was aware that it existed and whatnot, but he had, like, the records and stuff. He had, like, the 7-inches. He had a huge bunch of 7-inches and, you know, stuff that I hadn't heard before. And got turned on to all that kind of stuff, and the three of us started playing together, and that was like real late, like late 79, you know. So, and it, you know, it was
you remember the first gig?
The first gig, I think maybe we like did parties, you know. I think we like played at at friends' parties. I remember like we played this one party, this guy I'd gone to grade school with, and we didn't have a name yet. We weren't calling ourselves anything yet, My friend wanted to announce us, and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, the Rash." You know, so, that's a pretty good name still, yeah. You know? So, and at that point, like, Derek was singing mostly. We were still doing covers, but we were doing, like, punk rock covers, you know, because we realized they were pretty easy songs to figure out to play, you know?
Yeah.
So we were kind of doing that, and Derek would sing them.
When did it change from the Rash to the Meat Puppets?
That would have been somewhere in there. So it went from like, you know, that becoming aware of like the punk rock thing. You just realized, well, fuck, we could write our own songs, you know?
Right.
Kind of a thing. And we started writing stuff. And somewhere in there, Kurt wrote a song called Meat Puppets, you know?
Right.
And we decided to like give ourselves a name at a point, and we're figuring, you know, just trying to figure out what the hell to call ourselves. And we just plucked that, you know, the name of the song off of, you know, just grabbed it off the song and decided to go with that. And
you
somewhere near
the first club gig.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the first club gig. Yes, Kurt would probably remember. Derek definitely would more, you know, like the very first club gig. It's a little bit harder to, I can't quite remember, but, at, you know, at the time that the punk rock thing was starting, like, there was like a thing starting to happen in town here, you know,
right,
where punk rock shows could happen. And there was the folks that had like come before us. They were, you know, like, I mean, punk had been around for a while at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And there had already been like, you know, a scene in Phoenix, like we mentioned, the Feeders. And then there was the, you know, the Consumers and those guys.
Right. We ended up going to Hollywood.
Right. And all those dudes moved out there. And that's how we wound up connecting with Los Angeles.
Do you remember your first gigs in SoCal?
Yeah, that I do remember. I remember the first, you know, like I was the one, I made it out there first and played with the Feeders. That was before the Meat Puppets had made it out there because the Feeders' original bass player, Danny, had, you know, had moved out to Los Angeles and they had some shows they wanted to do. So they asked me if I wanted to play bass in it. And it was Frank Discussion and Johnny Precious, right? John Vivier playing drums. And I definitely wanted to do that. Johnny was a great fucking drummer and Frank was a unique character, you know. And I liked the songs and, you know, picked them up real quick. So that was like the first
time. Record, Jesus Entering Through the Rear?
Yeah, Jesus Entering From the Rear. Yeah. Good stuff. You know, real representative of the Phoenix, like a Phoenix rock, you know, in a way, of the, like the Phoenix feel for things. I mean, you look at like Alice Cooper and it's not, you know,
sure.
And Feeders, you know, there's just something about this place. Like, it's some kind of visceral about it. We wound up calling ourselves the Meat Puppets, you know, could have. You know what I mean? There's certain, just a certain viscerality about it. Living in the desert maybe has some influence on that.
What about the Monitor people?
Well, the Monitor thing happened then. That's the same thing. Like, the Meat Puppets' first gig in Los Angeles was at a little art gallery, like in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, just a little storefront gallery that this dude had. And I can't remember his name or the name of the place, but we came over and...
That might have turned into like the Free Music Society or something.
Well, that came right in the heels of that or something. We got in with those folks. Because that first gig was with Vox Pop, right?
Right, Don Bowles.
Yeah, and because he's from out here.
That's right.
So, and we got to hook up with those guys. And, you know, like Paul Cutler was in that. That's from out here as well, you know. And that night, let's see. You know, I remember, you know who was at that gig? Was Bill Bartell was at that gig.
Sure, Bill Bartell.
Because he just loved the Germs, right?
Right.
And Jimmy was there playing with Vox Pop. And I remember that night Bill stole Jimmy's license plate because Jimmy had a license plate that said Unit 666 was the license plate, right? So it's like Bartell, like, snatched that there. And Il Duce was there.
Yeah.
You know? So going back ways. But... We got connected with those dudes because Derek had struck up a male relationship, whatever, like a through the male relationship with just friendship with David Wiley, who had been the singer for the Consumers,
and ended up Human Hands.
Right, and then he was with the Human Hands, and so that's how we wound up like getting to know those guys, doing that gig out there with Vox Pop and stuff, and then. Okay. And from that, that's how we met Monitor.
I saw them at the Whiskey. Do you know Don Bowles now? He's a great-grandfather.
Wow. Is he a great-grandfather?
Yeah.
That's badass. I knew he was a grandfather, but none of you realize he got
six,
the...
Six.
Yeah. So then, you know, we met, like...
I asked about Monitor because the first time I heard you guys, it's in the middle of the Monitor album.
Right. And that's... Same thing, the connection to those people came through just that thing, Derek had, you know, gotten to know some of those folks, because they played, it happened a few years before that, before those guys all moved out to L.A., they played some shows around here, and there was a writer out here that wrote a thing in the New Times, you know, the weekly out here, about how this show was cool and blah, 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 and if you weren't there, you know, you weren't cool. And Derek got in touch with him saying, you know, what if you're too young to get into these bars or something? And through that, I think that guy passed along that letter to David somehow. And, like, David and Derek struck up this, you know, friendship. They, like, kept in touch with each other. And when we started playing together, and me and Kurt and Derek started playing out here, some of the stuff, you know, recording stuff on cassettes and whatnot, I think Derek sent some of that out to David. And... That's like how we got connected to the LA thing.
I think the Monitor people were Valley people.
Yeah, they're out in Van Nuys.
Yeah.
You know, and we got to know them, and we just made pals with those folks. You know,
also was on John Jones's Happy Squid. There was a tune too.
Yeah, that's right. That was
I first saw you at the LA Press Club.
Was it like Keith's Right Song?
Was that?
That was a ways in there. That seemed like it was kind of a ways in there. We've been at it for a while.
Visited a few times.
Yeah, we've been out there a few times, I think, and had gotten to know folks, and it's starting to, like, just come out and hang out. You know, we just, like, just come out and hang out in L.A. for a while, you know, stay out with the Monitor folks and friends of ours in Hollywood and stuff, and just kind of be out there for a while and do shows intermittently. And then, you know,
okay,
we really got...
We're at the end of the first hour here, Chris.
Oh, cool.
July 15, 2015, edition of the Beatles Show. Brother Matt, our guest, Chris Kirkwood.
Yeah.
Hold tight for hour two. July 15, 2015, it's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Yeah. peaceful time. For the peaceful time. Prova se escuta.
hladina nikoho nechrání.
Bude v rýky o svienie, stále je vlastný výzor. the point of tears. I've been gone for a thousand years. Blow off therapy. Come and go.
when you lose control. In practical situations, rely on it without procrastination. In the moment is the inspiration. Do it now without hesitation. So wrap your soul around the goal. Make a diamond out of charcoal. Before you smoke your next bowl, appreciate all that is here for you. Create a life that heals and renews. It will bring you out of the blues. Harmony, inner peace, and tenderness. And it'll see you through. The ones who always smile for smiles. Who are they trying? Go into the stillness. Close your eyes, meditate. Lift you out of your illness. I'd like to ask, but not vindicate. My friend, it's getting late. So wrap your soul around the goal. Make a diamond out of charcoal. Before you smoke your next bowl, appreciate all that is for you. Create a life that heals and renews. It will bring you out of the blues. Harmony, inner peace, and tenderness. That will see you through. To all beings everywhere, life only asks one thing. Be alive makes your spirit sing and emotions ring. Yeah. Wrap your soul around the goal. Charcoal. Before you smoke your next bowl, appreciate all that is here for you. Create a life that heals and renews. It will bring you out of the blues. Harmony, inner peace, and tenderness. It will see you through. And tenderness, it will see you through. Harmony, inner peace, and tenderness, it will see you through.
Yeah. Oh, make more sure. Yeah, I'd say that's an R&B number.
Well, for Pedro Show, we started the second hour off of Meat Puppets doing Walking Boss.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful song. And even more beautiful is the version you cats do that I've always loved.
Thanks, man.
Going back to your first album, people, I'm kind of responsible for that because I told Greg Ginn about that press club show, and he wanted to know more about them. Maybe I should be cursed for that. I don't know.
I don't know.
Shave the Prince. No, Shave the Price. No, Shave the Pride. I can't read. There's something brand new from Butcherettes. It's Terry Bender Gender. Gender Bender. Sha 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 with Povav D's say, Iskulakam, use special melodoika you need, Vodnik, Ushmadoma. Some Czech guys I just played with. Break Disco Dance, Can Can Heads out of Finland. Blow Off Therapy, that's Stu with the Double Knot Spy Guys, Panorama City. Kurt from the Nip Drivers, brand new proj Labor Camp he did with Paul Rossler called How's It Going. Los Umber Stones with Tu Beleza. Harmony, Inner Peace, and Tenderness by Stephen Kalinich and John Tiven. And finally, Automatic Mojo by the Meat Puppets. Something live on KCRW maybe 25 years ago. Back with Chris, we're talking about the early days of the Meat Puppets and him playing. Now you're working bass with original music.
Right.
What was that like?
That was interesting. I mean, it was interesting, definitely. I don't know. I mean, it was just, I think the band started, like, the reason the band, because like I was saying, you know, there was Derek knew some people, and just, you know, Kurt had been playing and stuff, and, you know, so there was, like, other people playing together and whatnot, and it had never been, like, this thing where Kurt and I sat around going, you know, we've got to start a band or anything.
Yeah.
And he'd actually gotten out of the house and had been, you know, done gigs and stuff like that, but I for sure hadn't, you know. And then, you know, once we met Derek and then the three of us played together, there was just a certain something that happened there that we all kind of dug, you know, it was yeah. just like, and it was something about it. I mean, it has to do with it being my brother maybe. And you know, and it was the original stuff in a way. I mean, it came out of the punk rock thing, like playing punk rock covers and kind of getting our heads around that a little bit. And then suddenly writing our own stuff and just, you know, this outlet for this feeling, you know what I mean? I mean. I don't know, it's fun. I got to a place with it where it's like, you know, I mean, the bass ain't that hard in some ways, you know, and especially like just certain kind of bass playing is fairly straightforward. But then I just, you know, got it to the place where it was like a, you know, like a, just a toy for me. It was just a, you know, the thing that I held on to while I got to this particular place in my head, you know, so that's kind of what that was, you know, and what it still is in a way, you know,
Same time, you guys were interpreting a lot of standards. I wouldn't call them so much covers because you guys really did make your own versions out of them.
Yeah.
So that might have been informing your bass playing, too.
So it definitely was, you know, and then the people that I was into and stuff, but the kind of stuff that I'd been into, though, was, like, beyond me, you know. I mean, I got into, like, you know, like the bluegrass stuff at first, then I started getting into, like, jazz at a point in the 70s, you know, and there's, like, that stuff was just beyond me, you know. Like playing wise, I just, you know, wasn't anything I thought I could really do or something. You know, it just seemed like they knew what they were doing in a way that, you know, punk rock kind of allowed me to like play without having to like really learn how to do it in a way. You know what I mean?
Feel your way through it.
Yeah, you know, and just and especially early on back then. I mean, you know, that's.
Well, like, you said Derek was singing it first. So what was the process? He would bring in the tune.
We'd hung out with him a lot, you know. His mom was getting divorced from her husband at the time. She was married to like wasn't Derek's dad, it was another guy, and the guy was like a dentist and had, you know, a house that had like a guest house with it. So since she was getting divorced from him, she let us kind of have the run of that guest house, you know. So we like would
that's like the practice pad.
Yeah, you know, and it was just a hangout place, you know. So we'd hang out and we'd like, you know, go through, I mean, like learn whole, like that whole first Damned record, stuff like that, you know.
Okay.
You know, and it was just easy to, like, figure the songs out. They weren't that complicated, you know. And then he would sing them and stuff. And then at some point, once we started writing our own stuff more, it kind of headed out, you know. And then Kurt and I started singing more and started singing our own stuff. And Derek kind of stopped singing at a point and completely stopped at a point. So.
Right, right. I'm curious about, though, how you developed parts on the bass for your brother's guitar, Derek's drums.
Well, Derek was so straightforward with his drumming, you know what
sure.
I mean? So it wasn't like, I mean, that was one of the things about the Miniman that was so sick. Like, you guys, like, Georgie was like a fusion drummer almost, you know? You know? I mean, yeah, like, just, like, I don't think Derek ever used his hi-hat for anything. I mean, you just never, like, pushed it up and down, you know? Like, the hi-hat pedal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
So there's yeah, but I don't like, think Keith Moon used much hi-hat either. I mean, everybody's yeah. different.
Yeah, Derek was a little along those lines, you know, just kind of, but it's so straight, you know, so it wasn't like, I never, like, we never, like, worked out bass and drum parts, you know?
Okay.
At all. I mean, it was just like, you know, it never got down to, like, that kind of, like, you hear a lot of, like, the 70s stuff, especially, you know, where the bass and drums were just doing this kind of specific thing. It was more like, you know, I would write my parts on top of Derek's straightforward stuff, and that's one of the things I think that influenced the way that I played is that, I think I brought some of that, like, or I wanted to get to some of those, like, little, like, rhythmic impetuses or something, you know, sure. kind of things. You know what I mean? And we'd do it on the bass in a way because the drums were just kind of, you know, so steady state.
Right, and right. Then, you could, like, kind of a springboard.
Yeah,
and then,
you know.
And you're hearing your brother's songs. Now, did he show you parts or he just played what he did and then you came with what you felt?
Yeah, no, he would play, he would show me the songs and, no, I would come up with the bass parts, you know, and then, like, and early on, I mean, it was like the first record and stuff like that, you know, that's pretty much just going along with the chords, kind of, you know
sure.
what I mean? It's like, na-na-na-na-na-na-na, I'm doing the same thing, kind of, and then there's, like, the next record, Meat Puppets 2 gets to a different kind of a thing, and suddenly we kind of slowed down a little bit, you know, but we'd already kind of been, you know, at that already, like, having, like, you know, Walking Boss on the first record,
sure.
there was definitely this...
Tumbleweeds.
Tumbleweeds, a certain kind of a feel, and already on that first record as well, there's kind of, you know, even on the first 7-inch, you know, Kurt's getting into this kind of arpeggiated stuff, you know,
Big
the
house.
Songwriting stuff, you know, yeah, you know, and there's like a little bit of a, you know, like the direction that we're, you know, able to go in or these different directions that we could go in and then did go in, like on, you know, Meepos 2, we got to that, kind of explored that side of ourselves and of the, you know, the band.
And then by the third record, you guys are doing Counterpoint.
Yeah, and at that point, then it gets into, like, then, you know, we've kind of gotten a handle on our instruments in a different way. And
beautiful. You know,
yeah.
Come that time of the show, Chris, when we get to have Brother Matt bring forth the spin cycle.
Do it, Matt.
Okay.
Cool.
Don't wait up for me, girl. Get gone. divided souls don't spread. We dead the conquerors from the top bed. With this song don't hold it as I say.
Drove you to do what you just did?
Black Pistol Fire.
Black Pistol Fire.
I had dug on them out at the Joshua Tree month or so ago at the Joshua Tree Music Festival. And so that started off, and everything else just kind of followed along.
Yeah.
Chris, we're at the end of the second hour here.
Right on.
July 15, 2015, Dish of Wapa Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. July 15, 2015, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. Cosmogron. Pedro Show started the third hour off with Meat Puppets doing the Losing End.
That's right.
What Other People Think, Other People Think by Ptolemy Kaufman. Cosmodrone with Cosmos. And Meat Puppets doing a cover of Minuteman, Price of Paradise, D. Boone song.
Damn.
You guys do real. What's your favorite Meat Puppet record?
Let's see. I like Double Nickels. Thought that was a good Meat Puppets record.
What's your favorite Meat Puppet tune?
Shit, I don't know. You know, I mean, there's so many. I think
you
I'm
have a favorite Meat Puppet tour.
Let's see. I don't know about favorites. You know, I mean, there's been some good times.
I don't blame you. You don't have to answer that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one to, like, nail it down.
Ball shit. Like, yeah, you've been through so much. You've done so much. The band has done so much. The band had to take some time off, but the band came back.
Yeah, that didn't have to take time off, but it did.
But it did. I mean, life is a life, and the way it turns out is the way it turns out.
Yeah.
Believe me, Chris, I am a slow learner.
Oh.
So, right now, we don't have Derek anymore on the drums.
Right.
You want to tell people about the current Meat Puppets?
Yeah. Well, Derek, you know, stopped playing with us. I mean, it just goes back to, you know, it's been a while now. But, like, you know, what I think it's all pretty much on me. Everybody kind of knows that. Anybody that's familiar with the band, at least, you know. You know, I forced those guys to not be able to keep playing with me, pretty much. And at that point, Derek, I don't think he wanted to keep playing with Kurt either, you know, at that point, and just kind of backed out of the whole thing. And
but he takes care of the archive.
He's definitely got, like, you know, a bunch of old stuff, and he does, you know, he's got his site that he keeps up and stuff like
so
that.
You got, let's see, what would you say? This guy's, the guy on drums now, his pop company. He's got some serious progeny.
Yeah, yeah. No, we've been playing with Shandon. Shandon saw him for quite a while now. And Shandon played with Kurt back when I was gone for, you know, back then. And when Kurt and I started playing together again, got us back in 06 already. It's been that long again. We asked Derek if he wanted to do it, and he didn't want to. You know, he hadn't played drums in a long time. And that was the thing about Derek going all the way back. It was like he wasn't into it from, like, a love of actually playing in a way. It was more of a conceptual thing, you know.
Sure.
And I kind of reflected in his drum playing and everything, you know. So it wasn't like, you know, he just didn't want to do it. So first we had Ted Marcus play with us for a while.
That's right, a New York cat named Ted.
Yeah, and that just kind of came together surreptitiously, you know, or whatever, just, or not surreptitiously, serendipitously. And, you know, he was working on another project that was happening when Kurt and I were recording, and it had drumsticks with him, so it kind of just fell into the gig. But then we started playing with Shandon back in 09, and it's Shandon Somm. Yeah, his dad is Doug Somm from the Sir Douglas Quintet and from the Texas Tornadoes and all of his solos.
What's your guys' latest album?
The last one was called Rat Farm.
Rat Farm.
Yeah.
And what's the next plan?
Let's see. We've got, you know, just this live stuff coming out the West Coast shortly. And then...
you bringing us new tunes?
There's a handful of stuff that we're doing, you know. It gets down to, you know, there's a handful of stuff. I mean, the cool thing about it now, the band's a four-piece now, pretty much, and has been.
Right, because, yeah, Kurt's son.
Oh, yeah, cool. We got Elmo's playing with us.
Elmo's on second guitar.
Oh, awesome, awesome.
Next week, it was a one-like thing, but now it's a regular thing, right?
It was kind of, I think, you know, Kurt went out with, had El play with him.
Well, I remember he'd be like, one tour, Elmo's little, band was the opening band, the Dillinger Elmo.
Yeah, Kirkwood Dillinger, yeah. Those guys were opening first, one tour. And then I think Elmo played with Kurt when Kurt did, like, an acoustic solo thing. One solo, I mean, Elmo was playing with him. And then we just started having him play with us a few years ago. And now it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's just gelled into the band's a four-piece now. Cool. And it's cool. I mean, it's a whole different thing in a way.
Cool. Next week at the House of Blues, huh?
Oh, next week you're coming to play.
Yeah.
Damn, that quick. Here, let's hear some music.
Try. like my diaper needs a changing.
One must still have chaos in one to give birth to a dancing star.
Alive, I'm the substance of
for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition, Diaper from Meat Puppets. Great tune, Diaper.
Wonder what that's about.
I'm wearing one right now. Then we heard the Sacred Cow doing Picantic Piano Wire with Society. My Body Betrayed Me by Blackwing. Round Eye with Suntan. And finally, The Gun Club with Yellow Eyes. Did you ever know Jeffrey?
Yeah, I knew Jeffrey, yeah.
Man, he was a great... well, so many people with the movement, incredible talents, but, yeah, the people, you know, we all have the flaws.
Yeah, a little bit of that. But I'll tell you, it was a treat, though. I mean, getting out to Los Angeles was a real fucking treat for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like this. I mean, look at how long you and I have known each other, you know? I've gotten to, it allowed me to get out of, you know, and I mean, there are plenty of people here in town that were fun, but having the, you know, getting to come out to Los Angeles and hooking up, I don't know, just meeting all these folks and stuff, you know, and like you said, I mean, it's the people and so many interesting folks, and that's a big part of it, big part of it, you know, and just like lifelong friends now at this point, you know?
Yeah, and getting back to your radio show, you get to rap with these cats in front of people.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting thing. I could see you doing it, you know. I mean, you've been doing this for a while now, you know, and it suits...
me and Brother Matt's first one, when was Brother Matt? It was
May 2001?
Yeah.
Jesus, you know what I mean?
We're over 14 years now.
That's awesome, you know, and it doesn't surprise me, though, Michael, because, I mean, your work ethic and your ability to carry, you know, to not just, you know, set these things up, but actually go through with them is pretty intense, and, and, you know, your love of, like, music and stuff, I don't know, it suits you, and it's just, like, the show's really good, and it's, like, it seems right, you know, so as far as, like, me doing it, though, it's, like, it wouldn't happen, it wasn't, like, my idea, you know, it was my friend Bill, you know, talking me into doing it, and I told him I would do it, but he just had to take care of absolutely everything, and now it's kind of, like, you know, just that, you know, that withdrawn side of myself somewhat, but I'm not that withdrawn, you know me, you know what I mean? I'm like withdrawn in a way, but still.
You got once, a persona, it's beautiful.
Yeah, you know, and once this started happening, I mean, it kind of like, he was right in that, that part of me that's, no, it just came out to where it's like, it's a fun thing to do, and I'm getting to talk with like some of my old pals, and then also people that I don't know that well, you know, and some people that I don't know at all.
Yeah, what's that like?
It's different. I mean, it's, you know, because like, you know how it is, done. I mean, you've been doing this long enough, you got some experience at it. And I've done, you know, just like, you know, we've done lots of interviews, right? And you have people asking us questions and that kind of stuff. And that's one thing. And that's fairly easy to do because it's like, well, I'll just answer the question, you know. But being on the other side of it's definitely a little bit different. But
I remember the first time I tried it, it was a lot different. Even though the sitch is kind of similar, it is much different.
Yeah, it's just trying to make sure that it doesn't, because it's like a show kind of thing, like where, you know, it's not like just sitting there trying to get answers out of somebody, because it's also kind of got this, has to have this flow or something. But I don't know, I'm having a good time doing it. We got we have some folks now that actually have come on board sponsoring the thing. And there's Wellspring is the name of these people, Wellspring Distributors up in Colorado. I mean, it's so perfect of a fit, right? These guys are pot distributors up in Colorado.
That's right, Mota's legal now in Colorado.
Yeah, just,
I think Oregon just...
I just sampled some last
Oregon
night.
And Alaska as
well. And Washington State.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool, you know, and to have actually, like, suddenly, like, to get these guys behind it in a way. I don't know, it's just kind of this cool little thing that's happening. I mean, you know, Bill was kind of right. I'm getting a kick out of doing it, you know, and suddenly I'm, you know, it's fun, and I'm getting to meet some folks, and now these guys have come on board, and I really like that, I like that it's pot distributors, you know.
Arizona doesn't look like much of a future of that, right?
But no, I think, you know what I think I actually heard?
Really?
Once
great.
I don't know, I think that I heard that the folks that made Colorado happen, you know, because there's like a well-funded, you know, movement going on. It's not just like, you know, stoners or whatever. It's people that are actually trying to, and have succeeded in getting pot legalized in some places. And I think Arizona is one of the states that they've targeted as possibly being, you know, like the handful of states that they're considering targeting or whatever for the go around with it. But,
it used to be
medical.
Very heavy.
Man, I know,
is it still felony?
10 years.
Oh yeah,
for a joint.
I still don't want to get caught out here with it. But we have
Nevada
medical.
Nevada too is heavy, right?
Yeah.
There's medical here though now, So.
Oh, there is medical. Oh,
yeah.
So that's
a
big change. That's lighting up.
And because of that, somehow I think I heard that this is one of the states that they're thinking about trying to make fall over. But I don't know, maybe it'll all happen at some point. It's just like the gay marriage thing,
Sure.
Where, you see, that was a pretty neat thing to see, just the whole thing get wiped out just like that in one fell move. The Supreme Court makes a call on it and just boom, it just goes away. All these little, the states having their own say on, their individual takes on it all. And, that thing, once you give it a right away or whatever. Here's the thing, though. I don't really give that huge a fuck. I've always had good butts.
You know what, though? What you say is really wise. Can I ask you, if some younger person getting into the music racket, what advice would you give them if they asked for?
I think I do get asked that occasionally, let's see. I don't know. I mean, you have to enjoy playing, absolutely. I think it depends on what you're trying to do with it, You see folks that manage to, use the business as a business and actually get someplace career-wise with it. And you see some folks that, don't. I don't know. A lot of people don't. I'd say it's more like about playing that I could actually advise somebody in, think. Where it's just like, well, fuck that, man. Guitars are a blast, Stringed instruments are fun, Bass is a blast.
Yeah.
Music's been a wonderful companion to me, that's for sure, just... Just play.
That's great advice. How can people find your radio show, Chris?
I think you just go on, it's called the Chris Kirkwood Podcast, so,
It's part of SoundCloud, right? It's hosted
It's on SoundCloud, and it's on, yeah.
For people, if you go to SoundCloud.com, and then in the search box, go for CRISKIRKWOOD.
Yeah.
Chris Kirkwood, you should be able to find him there, and the man is incredibly righteous and stimulating to take it in the ear hole from.
That's pretty fun.
I
don't know.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Yeah, Chris, I want to thank you, too. Yeah, because you and the pup's been very near and dear to my heart for over 30 years, so it's been a pleasure having you on the show today.
July 15, 2015 edition of Live from Pedro Show. Brother Matt, thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Central Aiden and Ben, Chris, once more from Arizona, you're the man.
Yeah.
Ah, you're the man,
Michael.
We'll
see you next week. Okay.
Right on, man.
Keep your powder dry.
Yeah.
Fucking A.